ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायण राइटिंग 17 और 18 नो राइटिंग 17 और 18 सो नो राइटिंग एक्चुअली 17 डजंट अपर पोर्ट 17 और 18 रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम फर्स्ट कैंटो 7th चैप्टर टेक्स्ट नंबर 17
इति प्रियां वल्गु विचित्र जल्पैः ससान्त्वयित्वाच्युतमिश्रसूतः अन्वाद्रवद्धं शित उग्रधन्वा कपिध्वजो गुरुपुत्रं रथेन इति प्रियां वल्गु विचित्र जल्पैः ससान्त्वयित्वाच्युतमित्रसूतः अन्वाद्रवद्धं शित उग्रधन्वा कपिध्वजो गुरुपुत्र
शर प्रभुपाद की अर्जुन हु इज गाइडेड बाय द इनफेलिबल लॉर्ड एज अ फ्रेंड एंड ड्राइवर दस सैटिस्फाइड द डियर लेडी बाय सच स्टेटमेंट्स देन ही ड्रेस्ड इन आर्मर एंड आर्म्ड हिमसेल्फ विथ फ्यूरियस वेपन्स एंड गेटिंग इट हिज चैरियट He set out to follow Ashwatthama, the son of his martial teacher. Next verse, this was the rest of any purport. We will read one more verse.
Tamapatantam savilaksha durat kumarahod vignamanarathena paradravat pranaparip surarvyam यावत् गमं रुद्र भयात् यताकः
अश्वत्थामा द मर्डर ऑफ द प्रिंसेस सीइंग फ्रॉम अ ग्रेट डिस्टेंस अर्जुना कमिंग एट हिम विथ अ ग्रेट स्पीड फ्लेड इन हिज चैरियट पैनिक स्ट्रिकन जस्ट टू सेव हिज लाइफ एज ब्रह्मा फ्लेड इन फियर फ्रॉम शिवा पर्पट अकॉर्डिंग टू द रीडिंग मैटर इधर कह और अर्कह There are two references in the Puranas. Kaha means Brahma, who once became allured by his daughter and began to follow her, which infuriated Shiva, who attacked Brahma with his trident. Brahmaji fled in fear of his life. As far as Arkaha is concerned, there is a reference in the Vamana Puran. There was a demon named Vidyunmali, who was gifted with a glowing golden airplane which traveled to the back of the sun and night disappeared because of the glowing effulgence of this plane. Thus the sun god became angry and with his virulent rays he melted the plane. This enraged Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva then attacked the sun god who fled away and at last fell down at Kashi or Varanasi and the place became famous as Lolarka. ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्यज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम द चैप्टर 7 ऑफ द फर्स्ट कैंटो द सन ऑफ द्रोण पनिश्ड हियर शिल प्रभुपाद कोट्स टू इलस्ट्रेशंस फ्रॉम द पुराणस ऑफ someone chasing someone, which appears to be like the highlight of the purport, but that is not the highlight. The highlight of the purport is Ashwatthama as a Dvijabandhu, after having committed a very heinous act, running away from Arjuna. That's the main thing that's being illustrated here with two Puranic examples. One of Brahma being chased by Shiva. When Lord Shiva saw that Brahma became lusty for his own creation, his own daughter. So that will not be our focus of discussion today. If the focus was to talk about how even Brahma can become lusty, that would be altogether a different topic. But here, the main theme being discussed is Lord Shiva chasing Brahma for a wrong act, or Lord Shiva chasing after the sun god for punishing one of his own devotees. So, when one commits a blunder, mistake, naturally one tries to escape the punishment. Actually, here Bhagavatam mentions that he was running away and subsequently he left the Brahmastra. All that is explained. And in Mahabharata it is explained how Ashwatthama, after performing this act, knew very well that the Pandavas are not going to spare my life. Knowing that well, he wore the deer skin and entered into the jungle in the assembly of ascetics and saints and sages. And he also started sitting with them as if he was a great ascetic, as if he had renounced the world and become a mendicant in order to escape from the punishment. But of course, the Pandavas followed him and were not ready to spare his life. In fact, Lord Krishna knew about Ashwatthama everything. Lord Krishna told the Pandavas, when first it was noticed that the Pandava children were killed and Draupadi became broken hearted, she almost fainted. Again, when she picked up herself and got up, she sat in a yogic posture and told Bhima that unless you get the jewel on the head of Ashwatthama, I am not going to maintain my life. I will not do any activity. So, even after making a solemn vow like this, still Draupadi again was sobbing incessantly. And Arjuna saw her condition. Of course, before Arjuna came there, there was only Bhima and Yudhishthir. Yudhishthir at once sent Bhima to find out the whereabouts of Ashwatthama. So Yudhishthir actually told Ashwatthama that you should kill him. You cannot spare his life. Such a sinful wretch. So he sent him away. But then Krishna followed. Krishna came there and said, why did you send Bhima behind this Ashwatthama? Because Ashwatthama, he was son of Drona. So his father had given him the great weapon of Brahmashira, which is also called as Brahmastra. So this Brahmashira was not known to anybody. Very rarely somebody would know how to chant the incantations for invoking the presence of Brahmastra, because it can cause destruction of the whole universe. So Krishna said, that is known to Ashwatthama, taught by his father, and none of you Pandavas know it except Arjuna. So if Bhima were to pick up a fight with Ashwatthama, then his life can be at danger and the whole universe can be at danger. So immediately Krishna told Yudhishthir that you yourself, you should arrange Arjuna to follow him. Both of your brothers should follow, he said. So Arjuna of course started chasing after Ashwatthama, and although Vedavyas told Ashwatthama that you should not invoke this weapon, it is very dangerous for all creatures, without caring for the words of Vyas, Ashwatthama invokes the presence of Brahmasharavapan. And then the pastime will go further. Pastime will be continuing further. But you can see the attitude of Ashwatthama in all these activities. And then Vedavyasa said, if you allow the weapon to be in the sky like this, it's going to cause destruction of the whole universe. You have to do something. It has to be directed towards somebody. It cannot be once invoked, just like the Vetal we say, no? Vetal also, once you invoke it, it has to attack someone. If you don't send it towards someone, then it will come back. Boomerang on the person who sent it. So immediately Ashwatthama contemplated, who is the last Shishu in the family of Pandavas? The Parikshit, who was in the womb of Uttara. Then he meditated and directed the weapon to Uttara's womb, sending it to kill the last child, Parikshit. Nobody was aware of this. None of the Pandavas ever thought he could do such a thing. But Ashwatthama was planning such a thing. We will be studying further about it. But we can understand how Ashwatthama became called as Dvijabandhu. Dvija means Brahmana. Dvijabandhu means friend of a Brahman or relative of a Brahman who does not exhibit Brahminical qualities. No, he is called as Dvijabandhu. Srila Prabhupada writes, a Brahmana is supposed to do Brahminical activities, but sometimes a Brahmana may do Kshatriya activities. Like Dronacharya was a Brahmana by birth. He had Brahminical qualities also, but he had acted as a Kshatriya. Or you find Vishwamitra, he was a Kshatriya, he was a Kaushika Raja. He was a king, Kshatriya, but then he acted as a Brahmana, Vishwamitra. So transcendentalists can act on different roles. Otherwise, generally it is prohibited. Only a Brahmana is supposed to act only as a Brahmana. Like as Krishna says, Paradharma, one should not follow the Paradharma. Paradharma Bhayavaha. He says that in Bhagavad Gita. But still, in the Mahabharata you find, although Dronacharya and his son Ashwatthama, they are Brahmanas, but they are special type of Brahmanas who act as Kshatriyas. But here you find Ashwatthama not even acting as a proper Kshatriya. Just like we have Brahma Bandhu, we also have Kshatra Bandhu also. Brahma Bandhu means one who is a so-called Brahmana, but who does not exhibit the characteristics of a Brahmana or the duties of a Brahmana. Like Patan Patan, Yajan Yajan, Dan Patigraha. He is called as a Brahma Bandhu. Like you find in Mahabharata the story of a Brahman who had become degraded, and once he was seen to be carrying cranes that he killed on his shoulders, and all the cranes were dripping with blood. So this Brahmana was carrying that. He was born in a Brahmana family, but he had become degraded, this Brahmana. So one of his distant Brahmana friends comes to again bring him back to track. He comes and tells him that you are born in a Brahmana family, you are supposed to be a Brahmana. Just see what you are doing. You are cruelly killing the cranes. So we find such stories even in the times of Mahabharata. Because somebody may be born in a Brahmana family and he has a good chance to become a Brahmana also from his father. There is a very nice ambience at home, Brahminical atmosphere. But he may not take advantage of that. And one may become degraded by not reciting the scriptures and not teaching the scriptures, not performing yajna, owing to laziness or owing to indulging in mischievous activities. In the same way, a kshatriya also is called as a kshatra bandhu. When a kshatriya does not behave as a kshatriya, like you find Virata King Krishanpo was telling about how he ran away from the battle. So there are certain things said for a kshatriya. A kshatriya can lay down his life in the battle but not run away from the battle. A kshatriya is never expected to killed in the battle like that. No wife of a kshatriya will want to see her husband coming, returning from the battle like that. So at the same time, there are many, many rules for a kshatriya. Kshatriya should not harm anyone when they don't have a weapon. Sunaja kshatriya, for example, the combat should be equal. If a kshatriya is holding a sword, the other one should be holding a sword. If a kshatriya has a chariot, the other one should be having a chariot. Kshatriya is coming on a horse or elephant back, the party should be equal party to fight with. Like one Maharathi will fight with one Maharathi. That was the standard. Whatever weapon the other person would use, kshatriya would use the same thing. So the other person would not have any weapon, kshatriya would throw away his weapon and he would fight with bare hands. That was the standard. But you find in the Mahabharata war, all the rules and regulations were thrown to the wind in between the war. Like you find both sides, Pandavas and Kauravas, were using wrong means to conquer one another. You find that. Lord Krishna gives a reason at the end of Mahabharata for this. He says, when the enemy is extraordinarily powerful and very great in size, then one will not be able to attack such a person without resorting to deceitful means. But it becomes all the more troublesome when such a formidable enemy takes to some deceitful means. You see, first of all, a formidable enemy who is far more powerful in size itself is very difficult to attack. But if that person takes to deceitful means, then it is all the more difficult to defeat such a person without adopting deceitful means. Lord Krishna says that. Why Lord Krishna taught the Pandavas to kill some of the Kauravas by trickery? Because for various reasons. One reason is the Kauravas had 11 Akshinis, Pandavas had only 7. The Pandavas were 5 and Kauravas were 100. And then, adding to this, the Kauravas were also resorting to lot of trickery in the war on an everyday basis. So Lord Krishna saw that although they are very powerful with warriors like Bhishma, Drona, Kripacharya, Karna, Duryodhana and his other men, they had many, many powerful men. But even after having powerful men, they were resorting to trickery in killing the Pandavas. Their only goal was somehow or other to finish the Pandavas. That was their goal. Like you find how Ashwatthama was killed. 7 Maharathis. Not Ashwatthama, Abhimanyu. How Abhimanyu was killed by 7 Maharathis focusing on one young lad like Abhimanyu. So many of them killing him together. So it is actually not according to Kshatriya codes. This is not the way they were supposed to fight. But such means are adopted. So the Pandavas were also told by the Lord to adopt such means. Of course, Pandavas never conceived of such a plan at all. Nor would the Pandavas, owing to their utmost morality principles, would ever even dream of adopting such mean-minded ideas of killing Dronacharya by telling him a lie, or killing Duryodhana by hitting him on the thigh. The Pandavas are most virtuous and very strict in following the law codes. They would lay down their lives but not break the principles of Kshatriya law codes. It was only because Lord Krishna told them they broke it. Only for the pleasure of Krishna, not with the greed for acquiring the kingdom of the whole world. That was not their goal. So we find in the war, in the great war, such a means were adopted. At the end, the war was over and there was Duryodhana lying on the ground, defeated. And war had almost come to an end. Everyone went back to their respective places and the Pandavas were in their tents. And Lord Krishna told Arjuna, Arjuna, at the beginning of this war, in the Virata Desh, I had met you. And you have prayed to me that, O Lord Keshava, you are my only refuge. I take shelter in you. You are my friend and you are my master. And you are the one who can guide me. You are like my brother. So you are the one who can protect me in this great war, he said. And Krishna said, I promise you that I will protect you. And Krishna now remembered that. No. And he told the Pandavas, whatever promise I gave Arjuna, I have kept it now, the promise. And seeing this, Yudhishthira Maharaj said, yes, Krishna, actually all the things that we possess, we owe them all to you. The wealth, the kingdom, and our very life, we owe it all to you. Nothing belongs to us, because you only got all these things for us. And everything is done by you, and we do everything for your sake. But then Yudhishthira Maharaj was very grief-stricken after the war. In fact, he was telling Krishna, when I think of what will be going on in the minds of Dhritarashtra and Gandhari, I am extremely fearful that we may get the curses of the chaste lady Gandhari and the eldest of the Kurus and Dhritarashtra. So he said, how are we going to pacify them? I don't have any courage to go in front of them and pacify them. They must be so broken hearted after seeing all their children vanquished in the battle. So he requested Krishna, please Krishna, you only should go and pacify them. So Krishna, just as he went as a peace messenger, immediately he told Dwaraka to board his chariot and arrange his chariot, and Krishna personally went. Very amazing to see how Krishna pacified Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. He told Dhritarashtra about the condition of Yudhishthira. He said, my dear great king, Yudhishthira always tried to settle by peaceful means, and he sought peace in so many different ways, but your Kuru sons, they never paid any heed. In fact, he said, Yudhishthira shares your sorrow, but at the same time he feels ashamed to even come in front of you, seeing that all your children are. And saying this, Krishna actually wept loudly, Krishna himself. And Krishna said, you know, all your children are finished in the battle, but let me tell you, it was all because of their own sinful deeds they earned by their acts. So in this way, Krishna pacified Dhritarashtra, and by weeping and taking some water and putting on his head, face, he pacified Dhritarashtra completely. And he told Gandhari, oh chaste lady, you have the power to burn the whole world if you want. You have so much of power. But let me request you not to feel any kind of revengeful attitude towards the Pandavas. Because I remember very well how you taught your sons that victory only follows those who are virtuous. Otherwise victory will never embrace them. But even after you repeatedly advised them, your sons didn't pay any heed. So it is not your fault, it is their fault. And now understand that the Pandavas, their love and respect for you and the Dhritarashtra is as much as they had before. Please do not be angry with them. So Krishna pacified her. And Gandhari also became pacified. She said, actually, till now, my heart was like a raging fire. On one hand, I was feeling great sadness, on the other hand, great anger. But after hearing these pacifying words from you, I feel very pacified. And she said, now who is left for us? Now there are no more sons left now. Now our only refuge is you and the Pandavas. Saying this, taking the cloth and covering her face, she was weeping loudly. So Krishna slowly brought both these people to a cool state of mind. And then Krishna took their leave and went. Why? Generally, when such wars take place, people also carry revengeful attitudes. Like you find sometimes two families have a quarrel. Like one family does something to the other family, and they also want to do something back. And this family, sometimes generation after generation, they remember. You seen that? Then they fight back. It never ends. So somewhere down the line, somebody has to pacify the parties, to give up the revengeful attitude. So practically there was no one left in the war except three people when the war ended. So Duryodhana was lying down on the ground, surrounded by beasts, because his body was practically covered with blood and dust of the ground. Any time he may leave his body. And Duryodhana did not lament, because he was happy because of dying in the battle in a glorious way without showing the back. So at that time, Ashwatthama, Kritavarma, so they all came there to see the condition of Duryodhana. Especially Ashwatthama was the one who felt most miserable seeing the condition of Duryodhana. It is said Ashwatthama considered Duryodhana as one of his most dear friends. On the other hand, Ashwatthama had the vengeance in his heart that Bhima had killed Duryodhana in such a way, by beating him on the thighs, and he killed his father Drona by telling him a lie. So because of this, Ashwatthama had a very revengeful attitude. And he wanted to somehow or other bring about victory for the Kaurava side. So he gave hopes to Duryodhana. Please do not lament, O great king. We will kill all the Pandavas and bring you great joy before you leave your take your last breath. I will return back, taking Kritavarma and Kripa with him. He proceeded. So they retired under a banyan tree where they were lying down under the tree. Very soon Kritavarma and Kripa went to sleep. But then Ashwatthama could not sleep, because when the mind is harboring some malice or revengeful attitude, no one can sleep. He stood up and he was pacing back and forth, then he would lie down. His mind was making plans to somehow or other bring about some destruction on Pandava's side. At the time he saw in the top of the tree, there were hundreds of crows which were sleeping in the night. One owl came from the sky and started entering into the tree where all the crows are sleeping, just like sometimes a lion enters into the flock of sheep. That it entered and started killing the crows continuously, several crows in a row. And immediately all the crows started crowing very loudly, and they all got up, many of the crows. And many crows died and fell down to the ground right next to Ashwatthama, where he was lying down. So Ashwatthama got to see that. Then immediately, idea arose in his mind. He woke up Kritavarma and Kripacharya and told them. They were actually half asleep. He got them up. And he told them, these Pandavas, having beaten the drums of victory, and they are sleeping in great joy now, and they can never be conquered with any kind of war now, because war has ended and we have practically no power. But there is only one way I feel they can be killed, because they have adopted so many foul means to kill people on our side. We have to kill them while all the Pandavas lay asleep in their beds. So when Kripacharya heard it, he was not at all for it. He told them that when we talk of victory, there are two factors that influence success or victory in life. One is our personal endeavor, another one is destiny. If one does not put sufficient endeavor in his life, hoping that destiny will favor me, such a person is condemned in the scriptures. So one has to exert oneself to the fullest by performing endeavor. And we have done that from our side, he said. But having put such an endeavor, if still we face adversity, we have to know that it is the arrangement of destiny. If one is still faced with adversity, even after endeavoring to the fullest. And such a person who understands it is a wise person, and he will not curse the destiny, or he will not try to act against the destiny anymore. By adapting to irreligious principles. So he said, what you are contemplating now is a very, very sinful thought.
to kill the Pandavas while they are asleep. Because when someone is asleep, they are as good as dead. Then how are you going to kill them? These are Kshatriya codes. When somebody is asleep, they are like dead people. They should not be killed. When somebody is running away, we should not chase them and kill them. Like Vritrasura says to his people, no? They are already running away from the battle and you people are running after the running demigods and you are going to kill them. They said, if you try to kill them, then you are not Putra, you are Mutra, he told them. Because the child and the urine come from the same source, he said, but those who are not righteous, they become as abominable as that, he said. If you are chasing people who are running away from the battle and killing them, for Kshatriya it is considered abominable. So, Kripacharya refused. This should never be done. Never contemplate on such a thing. And he said, now you go to sleep, we will wake up in the morning and we will make a plan. And they went to sleep again. But then Ashwatthama was bent upon fighting. He started making plans, standing up. And Kripacharya sometimes saw that he is still awake and Ashwatthama was again seeking support. Then Kripacharya told him, it seems that now no one can stop you. You seem to be very much bent upon it. So we will fight in the morning. Now if you sleep nicely, we will get a good rest and we will be energized in the morning. Let's get up and go. But Ashwatthama said, if you are all not coming, I am going alone. Because I want, our goal is to please Duryodhana, our king. So we don't want to see the Pandavas flourishing while our king lays in the ground eating the sand. So we have to kill. So he was like very much bent upon going. Then they thought that we also have to follow. They followed him. Kripacharya and Kritavarma, they also followed him. So when Ashwatthama was about to enter the tent of the Pandavas, when everything was pitch dark, he saw hundreds of eyes, a personality with hundreds of eyes, carrying snakes around his neck and waist and hands and everywhere, all over his body, wearing a tiger skin on the lower part of his body and a deer skin on the top of his body. And Ashwatthama thought, who is this person who is coming to attack me? He sent several arrows, hundreds and volleys of arrows to kill him, and nothing happened to that person. That person stayed at one place. And Ashwatthama was frightened. So when he went near, he saw it was the Lord Shiva whom he used to worship. So Lord Shiva said, I have been protecting the Pandavas all through, owing to my love for Krishna. And the Pandavas have achieved the victory, as they are supposed to achieve. But now it is their destiny, that they are also supposed to face a part of the defeat. And you are going to be instrumental in that. And I am giving you a sword. He gave him a very, very shining sword. And he said, this sword will empower you to perform the act. So he gave him and Lord Shiva disappeared. As soon as Ashwatthama took the sword in hand, he got a tremendous power that completely infused him with energy, unbelievable energy. Subsequently, Ashwatthama performed such a massacre. After he went in, he caught Drishyadumna from the sleep. He woke him up from the sleep by kicking him. And Drishyadumna got up from his sleep, he caught hold of his hair. And Drishyadumna hardly could speak a sentence or two. And he mercilessly butchered him with his sword. Like that he did many massacres. At last he came to the tent of the Pandavas. Actually what had happened was Pandavas were not there. Why? Lord Krishna had told them in the battle that it is a sacred vow of a Kshatriya. When he wins the battle, he should remain in the enemy's quarters for one night. And they are supposed to come only the next day. So he told the Yudhishthir that you send away all the warriors back and you and your brother should stay here. So all of them had stayed in enemy's quarters in the battle. So they were not there. So who were there in the tent was the Pandavas, innocent children, teenage children. So they were the ones. But Ashwatthama mistook them for Pandavas. You see, when one becomes enraged with anger or revenge, then one loses all sight, one becomes blinded by that anger. So one commits mistakes, and you can see here, example of Ashwatthama. So Ashwatthama
severed all their heads. And he was proceeding outside, but then he thought, let me show what courageous deed I have done. I can assure Duryodhana that I have killed all the Pandavas. So then he returned back and took all the heads. And then he went back to show it to Duryodhana. Of course, Duryodhana could not believe his eyes. When the heads were brought to him, he said, they look very much like Pandavas, but they don't seem like Pandavas also. Then he asked him to bring the heads, and he pressed the skull of those heads, and they were very tender and soft, and they were getting crushed. And Duryodhana said, even with my soft hand, even in my condition now, I am almost about to die, I am able to exert my strength and crush the skulls. These are certainly not the Pandavas. You have done a very, very great crime. These are Pandavas' children, the last children, the last vamsha of the Kuru dynasty. You have done a very great mistake. So Duryodhana, shouting, alas, alas, he left his body. Like that. So certainly Ashwatthama did not do a glorious thing. It was the most inglorious thing to kill the children while sleeping in the bed. So, you will see Ashwatthama's behavior, character, that mistake after mistake after mistake he will be doing. You will observe that. Like first he kills the Pandava children in this way, not following the good advice given by Kripacharya. At the end, Kripacharya even told him, because we don't know what is right for us to do, it's better for us to approach Dhritarashtra and Vidura and take the advice of the Kuru elders, because we exactly don't know whether we can kill the Pandavas while sleeping. But Ashwatthama did not pay any heed. He said, no, we have to go. In fact, Kripacharya gave a nice example. He says, when a person becomes determined to perform a sinful act, then he loses all sense of morality. He said, it is like a ladle, a wooden ladle, which is put into a ghee pot. The wooden ladle cannot taste the ghee, isn't it? But he said, a person who follows the ones whose senses are controlled, it is like a tongue that tastes the ghee, he said. Like tongue is able to taste the ghee, but a wooden ladle is not able to taste the ghee. Similarly, for a person whose senses are uncontrolled, moral principles are of no avail. He will not pay any heed. All these things were spoken by Kripacharya before he went with Ashwatthama. But then when Ashwatthama killed people, those who were escaping and coming out of the tents, they were killed by Kripacharya and Kritavarma. They were killing them. So it's a very, very inglorious way of murder. So these are things which make a Kshatriya a Kshatra Bandhu. There are people who are sleeping, he is killing those who are sleeping. There are people getting up and running out of the tent to save their lives, and they are being killed. Those who are running for their lives, they are being killed mercilessly. So these are never to be performed by a Kshatriya. That actually reduces the duration of life and makes a Kshatriya lose his prowess and fame and name. And such activities make a Kshatriya glide down to hell. So no idea Kshatriya would do such an activity, as we find. And you will find Ashwatthama subsequently running away and, you know, wearing deer skin like a Brahmana now. Again, he becomes like a Brahmana, you know, surrounded by ascetics in the forest. He thought that maybe if Pandavas spare me, that now I become a Brahmana, I will be happy. If they don't spare my life, I will send Brahmastra. Causing destruction of the whole universe. Even if I die, no problem. Let them also die along with me. So this is in Tamaguna. Whether I am killed or not is another question. They should be killed. In the course of they being killed, if I have to be killed, I don't mind also. So then he sent the Brahmastra. And then you will see Krishna telling Arjuna to withdraw the Brahmastra, and he does it. Isn't it? And then they catch Ashwatthama, they bring him, they are about to kill him. Instead of that, they remove the jewel on his head. And then they leave him pale, with no beauty. But then you find that Ashwatthama doesn't stop. He wants to kill the Shishu in the womb of Uttara. You will see that. So in this way, you find Ashwatthama committing mistake after mistake after mistake as a Kshatrabandhu or a Dvijabandhu. The Shastras give such pastimes as practical illustrations for us to learn valuable lessons. You see, all the four categories of people, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, all these four people can give up their dharma. It's possible. Every one of them can give up their dharma. Or they can indulge in sinful activities. Both are condemned. Giving up the dharma is itself considered a sinful activity. That itself is like sin. It's condemned. Like Arjuna is being scolded by Krishna in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. That you are a kshatriya, you cannot give up kshatriya dharma. For example, if a kshatriya is seeing that a woman is being molested, or a child is being tortured, or a cow is going to be killed, or old people are being mistreated, a kshatriya is never supposed to keep quiet. Just like you find Parikshit Maharaj, when he finds cow is being tortured, immediately he takes an action. Immediately. That's the meaning of a kshatriya. But if a kshatriya fails to perform his dharma in offering protection, then he immediately contacts some sin by that, by not performing one's dharma. So all of them, like a brahmana for example, can give up his dharma. A brahmana may give up his dharma. For example, a brahmana is never supposed to accept salary. But if a brahmana accepts a salary, then he is giving up his dharma. Or if a brahmana indulges in religious activities, he is supposed to be a vehicle of the instructions of the Lord coming through the scriptures. But if he himself becomes corrupt, then again the brahmana is fallen. So, if a brahmana does not perform yajan, yajan, patan, patan, dan, patigraha, that causes some sin. But if a brahmana commits sin, that is even more worse. Then he gets even greater quantity of reactions for that. Similarly, kshatriya also. A kshatriya may see some atrocious activity going on and he may not take action out of fear or out of ignorance or negligence. That is sin. But if a kshatriya goes out of the way to cause harm, for example, kshatriya is seeing that a old man is being mistreated. So he is supposed to take action immediately on the other person. If he doesn't take action, that means he is failing in his duty. Whereas if he himself tortures the old man, then it becomes sin. Like that. Both the things are condemned. So a kshatriya can, like for example, you hear the story of Jayadrath. Jayadrath, while going in the forest with his son and several hundreds of soldiers, he is going in his chariot and foot soldiers and elephant soldiers and horses and everyone. Hundreds and thousands of them are walking through going through the forest. Actually, he is going to marry with someone, to the princess of some other province. But on the way in the forest, he gets to see in the beautiful regions of the forest at one place, Draupadi. Draupadi is plucking flowers from a tree while all the Pandavas had gone out in that forest, had gone out somewhere. So he saw the dark beauty of Draupadi and became attracted. So from a distance he saw and he told his son, "Hey, go and find out who is that beautiful lady." So he was going to marry someone, now he became lusty for someone else in the way only. So his son, I think his son was Koshikata, I think his son also. So his son goes to meet Draupadi and ask her questions about her whereabouts and who is she and her kingdom and everything. So he said, "My father wants to come and meet you." So immediately she covered her head and she said, "I am the wife of the Pandavas and all of them are away from home and the water is kept there. And if you want, you drink water and tell your father to drink and you wait outside till the Pandavas come." So she said and she proceeded inside. So then Jayadratha told his son, "Okay, you be here, I will go and directly face her." So directly he went and he barged into her house, into cottage as if, he is invited there. So he started describing the glories of Draupadi's beauty, telling her about the beauty of her eyes and beauty of her body and everything. And Draupadi became angry and Draupadi told her, "You fool. How dare you are entering the house of a woman and when her husbands are away and you are talking
Yes, they're like an animal. And she said, when Yudhishthir and Arjuna, Bhima, they all come back, you'll be running for your life. They will not spare your life. So, anyway, the story proceeds. That also comes in Mahabharata. How he dragged her by her hands, just like Sita Mata was taken away. In the same way, he picked Draupadi and put her on his chariot and was running. When actually, there was Sudanva Rishi there. What is his name? Dhaumya Rishi there. So Dhaumya Rishi was a Brahmana, what can he do? He simply ran after the chariot and all the people, shouting and yelling and giving the sacred instructions from the scriptures. How one should not, run away with another man's wife. So, but at least he wanted to give information to Pandavas later, so he was also running behind. So later on, when Pandavas got the information, then Bhima, Arjuna, Yudhishthira, all of them, they all came together. So when they were all coming running, Draupadi was telling Jayadrath, "Do you see that great personality with a raised head and a body of the golden hue, who is having a beautiful flag on the top of his chariot, and who never fails in the path of his virtue? And that is my first husband, who is Yudhishthira Maharaj." And then, "Do you see the other one?" She showed one by one. She is telling Arjuna, one who is the greatest warrior. She is describing the glory of all her husbands to him. "And now you will not be able to escape for your life. They will finish you now." She tells him. So anyway, we were telling this why. Because Kshatriya is supposed to protect a woman if she is being mistreated by someone. Here you find Jayadratha coming to mistreat a woman who is another man's wife. That means a Kshatriya is failing in his duty. He becomes Kshatriya Bandhu. He is not Kshatriya anymore. Kshatriya has failed in his duty. So, Ashwatthama has been like this. Now I told you 2-3 mistakes of Ashwatthama. The same Ashwatthama once went to Dwaraka to meet Krishna. So he told Krishna, "Oh Krishna, I have come here to seek a charity from you." Krishna asked, "What do you want?" "I would like to possess your chakra with me." So Krishna said, "Okay, my chakra is here, you can pick it up." So Ashwatthama went there to fetch the chakra. And it was so heavy, he just couldn't even move it. When he was trying to move the chakra, he was falling repeatedly again and again. And actually Krishna had asked him, "Okay, if I give you chakra, what will you do with it? Why do you want it?" So Ashwatthama said, what Ashwatthama said? Anybody knows what he said? "Yeah, I will challenge you to fight with me and I will kill you." He said. So Krishna remembered that and he said, "This is Ashwatthama, I remember that." He said, "He is wicked, he is cruel and he is sinful." Krishna told. So this fellow has this tendency from long ago. Now that that is why he told Yudhishthira that you are sending Bhima alone. Bhima cannot tackle him. Because this fellow is a fool, he will indulge in a warfare practice which he himself cannot control, because his senses are not under his control. So he said, "You should send Arjuna to withdraw the Brahmastra," he told him. So this kind of performance of religious practice makes one to indulge in religion more and more. It's like a quicksand or a soft sand. You put your leg there, then it sucks your leg. Then you put your another leg, it sucks that also. And then you go down deep. And there is no end. Like all of us, in the movement of Srila Prabhupada, we are able to, I was hearing a lecture or a cassette I was hearing, how we should be grateful to Prabhupada for keeping us in this position where we are able to follow the pure religious principles. We should be always grateful. Because falling in the path of religion is the easiest thing to do in this world. And the nature of the religion is such that you fall once, and then it is like a bottomless hole. You repeatedly fall again and again and again and again, and you go into a bottomless pit. That is the nature of religion. And religion also is like that. If you perform religious principles, if you become pious, then you again and again reinforce pious activities more and more. Like you wake up in the morning, you chant the rounds, you sing kirtans, you accept prasad, you live with devotees, you read scriptures,
And what happens? You flourish in piety. Similarly, you can flourish in sinful deeds. So both, Krishna says, pravartante ashuchi vratao. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, no? Krishna uses the word pravartante. Pravartante means flourish. Some people flourish in sinful activities. That means they flourish in drinking and smoking and illicit sex and all kinds of activities. People flourish in sinful deeds. Another place he uses is ugra. Prabhavante ugra karmanah kshayaya jagato ahitaha. So that also he says, people flourish in horrible deeds, horrible activities. So once he says Govind Prabhu had come here, one morning Bhagavatam was speaking. He was telling that the nature of performing sinful act is such that it makes our heart hard, like a stone. The more you perform sin, you become hard-hearted. And then you don't feel any kind of, sensitivity or pain at all. Like you see the doctors in Sasun, once we went to see some people there. You know, for the first time when we went, somebody was, they were all crying, with their, one fellow's leg is gone, one fellow's hand is gone, one fellow, everyone was, when the doctor was treating them, they were crying like anything, So when we were seeing that, we were feeling like, we were trembling, like when doctor is, performing some kind of, dressing the wound or something. Like one fellow had a terrible accident, It was bleeding profusely all over the face and some portions were, popping out of the body, Some flesh was hanging from his face. So when he saw that only, we were feeling like vomiting there only. We didn't even want to see it. We were becoming allergic, But the doctors were treating it, as if it's a normal thing, It's an everyday thing you do, They were dressing it like you are putting normal dress on your body. They were dressing it, For them it made no difference. And I told the doctors that, probably you people must be having the best realization, Because you are seeing so many people crying and suffering. And one doctor said, no. He said, we see this day in and day out. And it doesn't make any difference for us. Like, they said it's a typical thing, they said. Whenever some accident happens, our relatives and friends come, they surround, and they say, doctor, doctor, please save their life, we will pay any money and this and that. We have seen it a million times. It makes no difference to us. And for us, treating these people is a normal thing. They were saying. So, you get used to it. You get used to it. Like this, dissect a frog, first I had little interest in medicine, I was planning to go, after my 10th standard, I had a little desire to take pure science. But when I came to know that you have to cut the frog, then I preferred to become engineer. After that, you have to cut a frog into two and see the details inside. So, you get used to it. Similarly, Govind was telling that you get used to, certain activities and they become a habit. And you do them without feeling any remorse or, without feeling any regret or without feeling any, like you do a thoroughly sinful deed and then you feel, oh, okay, what's the problem, You feel quite normal, Like somebody who's a thief who has been stealing. Like one fellow had stolen 10 lakhs and when he was caught, he was smiling as if nothing has happened. So what? This is quite normal. I've been doing it. They become hard-hearted completely. Similarly, lust, pride, anger, all these things make us hard-hearted. That is why we should not exercise them. We should abstain from them. We should not exercise them. If you exercise these things again and again, we become used to them and we become hard-hearted. And we lose our sensitivity. The tenderness goes away. We become hard-hearted in doing them again and again. And sinful activities are like that. After becoming devotees, one should never do sin. Or if one commits sin, one should feel great remorse and repentance. And one should repeatedly seek forgiveness. But if one performs sinful deeds and one does not care for them, one thinks that I'm a devotee. Some devotees blindly do sinful activities and not worry about them. Then comes into the seventh offense. Namno baladyase hi papa buddhi. Jaan bujh kar paap karna. Thinking that I am a devotee now, nothing will happen to me. So, it's very unfortunate situation. After gaining the knowledge of what is right, what is wrong, what is beneficial, what is unbeneficial, after knowing all these things to still commit sin. So,
We should not become like this, adhama jana. Actually, we say adhama janara bandhu. We say, no? Actually, the Guru is Karuna Sindhu. Because of him only we are saved from sinful life. We have to know, once Sridhara Swami was in Pune, he was telling, as devotees, we are light years ahead of karmis, he said, with respect to piety. Every day we are accumulating so much piety. We are waking up in the morning, coming in front of the deity to take darshan of the Lord. Shastras are talking so much about one who enters the temple of the Lord, one who takes darshan of the deity, one who drinks charanamrit, one who bows down to the Lord, one who chants the holy name, one who visits the holy places, and we are doing all of it. And more of such things. So we are becoming kritapunya punja. Kritapunya punja means heaps and heaps of past credits we are accumulating. And we are becoming spiritual millionaires with respect to spiritual life. But at the same time, he said, if you are careless, from millions of light years ahead, we will fall down. Can you imagine if somebody falls? The greater you go, the harder the fall, isn't it? So he said, we should not slip in our spiritual life. We should not fall down by engaging in sinful activities, carelessly or neglectfully, foolishly, or deliberately. One should not fall prey to sinful activities. One should strenuously endeavor to give up sinful life. But the world tendencies will come, but one should resist the temptations, subdue the evil, eradicate ignorance, and try to avoid sinful activities completely. Because the tests that are put forth in front of us are certainly not beyond our capacity to succeed. Whatever test the Lord puts us in, Lord also is ready to give us the strength to face them. So one should take help of the Lord and resist the temptations. And not foolishly, like an ignorant fool, put oneself in the midst of temptations and invite trouble. A devotee should always endeavor to avoid tempting situations, and if put in tempting situations, resist temptations and subdue the evil and awaken the virtue in one's heart. And that is how a devotee will eventually be able to give up the whimsical behavior. Here you find Ashwatthama doing whimsically so many things. When one engages in a religious act, one becomes thoroughly whimsical. And why a person is doing what is he doing, there is no good reason or rhyme for that. Like here, Kripacharya is giving so many reasons from Shastra, and he is also telling that we can approach Kuru elders like Vidura, who may give us good advice. But you don't find Ashwatthama paying any heed. Vartate kama karataha. Yes, Shastra vidhi mutsidya vartate kama karataha. Nasasiddhi mavapnoti nasukamna paramgati. One doesn't get good in this world, one doesn't get good in the next world also. So this whimsical tendency should be checked in the life of a devotee. And religious acts should be completely given up. Of course, if one falls down due to some unpremeditated fall, and then one feels great remorse and repentance for it, then one will be forgiven. Otherwise not. Otherwise, if one falls down in a planned way, then one loses the support of Krishna. One loses Krishna's mercy and Vaishnava's mercy. So, we are all living in the midst of Vaishnavas. Like Brahmanas are supposed to flourish in Brahminical activities by living in the company of other Brahmanas. Kshatriyas are supposed to flourish in Kshatriya activities by following the law codes, by giving protection to the weaklings. That is Kshatriyas. Similarly, we are Vaishnavas. In the company of other Vaishnavas, we should flourish in the Vaishnava qualities and not become a blemish in the society of Vaishnavas by either failing to perform our duties or falling prey to irreligious activities and bringing infamy to ourselves and to the Vaishnava community and to Guru and Acharyas. So, if one has fallen down due to some unpremeditated fall down, then one should seriously repent and feel remorse. So, in this way, Shastras give very nice practical examples of people who have lived a pure life and who have also fallen prey to their religious principles. Shastras give both Vidya and Avidya and puts it in front of us so that we can learn valuable lessons from them. Because if Shastras were to only talk about good
and they would never talk bad examples. Then we would not learn so much. So Shastras are giving examples of Ashwatthama, such personalities. Why? So that we can learn what we should not do in our lives. Thank you very much. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.